You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis.
Sorry about my outfit. I just come from a wedding, so I apologize for that. It was a weird wedding, too. They had the father-daughter dance. They ended up leaving together. All right, one more joke like that, I'm getting the hell out of here. All right, because that's uncalled for right there. I guess I should do this, Gator Doug. That's right, Gator Doug. You know, the first phrase, that wasn't my original phrase. The first one I come up with was, yipper dipper ripper stripper. I know, right? It wouldn't fit on a hat. Plus, I don't know what the hell it means. All right.
That was the unmistakable slogan and voice of the lovable redneck, Larry the Cable Guy. Comedian Dan Whitney has been performing as Larry the Cable Guy for almost 30 years now, touring to sold-out crowds and starring in 3 Larry the Cable Guy movies and several multi-platinum comedy albums. Now Dan Whitney is back with his first televised comedy special in over a decade called Larry the Cable Guy, Remain Seated. And today Dan joins me on the show to talk about his education in Southern redneck culture while going to college in Florida, the origins of Larry the Cable Guy, and how Larry went from being a bit that he did on talk radio shows to a wildly popular stage act. He shares a few of his comedic inspirations, how he tests out new jokes on Twitter, and what he does when folks on social media don't like his politics. He also discusses what it's like touring with his pal Jeff Foxworthy and his unlikely friendship with comedian Louis Black. Plus, Larry the Cable Guy weighs in on the sketchy crowd at Walmart after midnight, his love-hate relationship with the county fair, and how he's handling the coronavirus quarantine. Coming up with Dan Whitney, I mean Larry the Cable Guy, in just a moment. Dan Whitney, better known as Larry the Cable Guy, is a multi-platinum recording artist, Grammy nominee, Billboard Award winner, and one of the top comedians in the country. Now he's out with a brand new hour-long comedy special on Comedy Dynamics Network called Larry the Cable Guy, Remain Seated. Dan, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me, Ben. Boy, I love that intro. You read it just like I wrote it.
Well, I understand that this is your first new stand-up special in over a decade. Why such a long hiatus?
Yeah, well, you know, it's not really a hiatus. I've been doing other projects that I use material on. And so, you know, I didn't have enough for an album. I did Them Idiots with Bill and Jeff. And then Jeff and I toured for about 2 years. And we made a special out of it called We've Been Thinking. And, you know, so that's another hour. So that's like that's over an hour there, an hour and a half. And so I don't know. I've been spending time with my family. I only do about 30 dates a year. And they came to me and said, man, you haven't done a special in a while. Do you want to do a special? And I said, you know what, let me see if I got the material. So I went through and I had plenty of material to do another album, and I love the material. It's some of my best stuff because I didn't really care anymore. You know, yeah, I get to a point, Ben, it's like what I always said about Conan O'Brien. When he was on The Tonight Show and he knew they were going to lose The Tonight Show, that's his funniest shows he's ever done because they could have cared less what they did.
That's so true.
That's so true. And it's kind of, you're just free. Your mind is free to be yourself. And so I didn't really plan on doing another one. I was just enjoying my life, and I had a great career. And I was just having fun and write, oh, this is funny. And I'd write it down. I'm looking at my stuff. I go, man, this is some funny stuff. So I said, yeah, we'll do another one. So this is my first solo project in about 10 years.
Wow.
And I didn't, and you know, I do one liners. I didn't think I could write any more Walmart jokes, but by golly, heck, I found about another 7 minutes worth.
Yeah, you sure do. And by the way, I love your Walmart after midnight bit that you do in the special. You know, my dad is sort of the opposite of that. He likes to go to Walmart first thing in the morning around 4 or 5 a.m. For him, it's kind of like his morning coffee, I guess. Those vastly different crowds, the early morning Walmart customers versus the late night customers?
I've always enjoyed the late. There's more to watch.
Yeah.
There's definitely more entertainment on the late night crowd. It's kind of like a Greyhound bus stop, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I just realized that I sort of shortchanged my dad, and he'll be upset at me. It's not a Walmart. They're better than that. They have a super Walmart where he lives in Texas. And those places are like miniature cities, aren't they?
Oh, they got everything in there. And I think I talk about almost everything they got in there. So, yeah. I mean, God love them. I mean, I make fun of Walmart. I've been shopping at Walmart, obviously, forever. You got to shop there to know what you're talking about. Some of them sell my Bloody Larry mix. It's kind of like a Bloody Mary mix. So there, look, they can take a joke. So that's, God love them.
Yeah. Have you ever heard from Walmart? Are they generally pretty cool with your joking about them for, God, I don't know how many years now?
Yeah, no, they're cool with it. Look, if you can't make fun of yourself and pick on yourself, you got problems. Yeah. I'd rather shop at a place that doesn't mind getting ribbed than one that gets all bent out of shape. I don't want to shop from them anyway.
Walmart for Larry the Cable Guy is sort of like Hot Pockets for Jim Gaffigan. It's just the joke that keeps on giving, huh?
I hear you. And, of course, I got a bunch of stuff. I work a lot of fairs, and I grew up in fairs, so I got a nice long chunk about the fair as well. So, I mean, yeah. It was fun. I'll tell you, it was fun writing these jokes. I mean, just one, I come up with one and then boom, boom, there was two good tags. And
yeah,
it was a lot of fun. I got so, and some of them I get on stage, you know, I'd work these shows and I get so into the joke, I would just boom, boom, boom. And I go, oh man, those were funny. So I'd write those down. I was just creating on stage a lot of these things.
Yeah, and, you know, these fairs, I mean, it's been ages since I've actually been to a fair. I used to always go to fairs because I'm originally from South Texas, and now I'm in California, and you have to drive miles and miles outside of town to get to a fair. But, you know, I mean, those places, they're pretty much death traps, aren't they?
Well, I tell you what, I grew up in the fair. Some of my greatest memories as a kid were going to the small town fair. I mean, I still love them, but I gotta say, you know, there's one, I always used to say, there's one sign you don't see at a fair anymore, and that's they don't have the no shirt, no shoes, no service sign. I mean, holy smokes. Some of the people that are going nowadays, you're like, what has happened to the fair?
Yeah. And God, the porta potties, you do a joke about that. I was at a fair a while back with my wife, and she tried to go and just use the restroom. And she came back and told me that the porta potties were full, not full with people, just full as in they had reached critical mass, everyone.
You know, it's so funny. When I did my show on History Channel, Only in America, that's one of the episodes that made me tell my manager, that's it. This is my last season. I'm not doing it anymore. And that's when I went out with a porta potty crew, and we talked about the how they started, and you know, it's kind of a history of how we got porta potties. And of course, they made me go in and clean a porta potty, and I said, "That's it, I'm done." I mean, it's the most disgusting thing on the planet, but I love my joke about the porta potties. That was a line that came up as I was doing my show. I had a couple porta potty jokes, and it just popped in my head, and I said, they ought to have a midway game where you can win air freshener and flush water. I was like, oh, that was a good one.
And by the way, speaking of my wife, I didn't realize it until I watched this special, but I guess your wife is about the same age difference as me and mine. She's 13 years younger. I see a lot of guys like Dick Van Dyke, Larry King, Norman Lear, all these guys who live into their 90s, all have much younger wives. And I don't know about you, but I'm hoping that maybe marrying a young woman is like the fountain of youth for us old guys or something.
I know. Well, you hope so. I lied to my wife about my age, though, because her cutoff date was 40, and I was 40, and I lied and said I was 38.
Really?
And by the time, she realized a couple of days later when we'd already started liking each other, then I had to tell her the truth. But
wow,
it worked out good, man. My wife is my soulmate, my best friend, and she's but yeah, it's like, you know, I always say, it's awesome. I love her to death, but she's younger. So it's like when it comes time for the, you know, for the lovemaking, it's like, holy smokes, this isn't a prison visit. Slow down, you know? It's like, it makes love to my wife like having a stroke, but with a better ending.
Well, Dan, if it makes you feel any better, you know, I lied to my wife too. I think that her cutoff was 35. I told her I was 36 because I figured I could get away with that. I was actually 42. And I very gradually broke it to her. Every couple of weeks, I would reveal that there was another year or two to my age. We're bad guys, aren't we?
That is, we actually, they thought we must have looked that age. So that's the good news.
Oh, no. She told me later that, you know, she just thought that I was a really terrible looking 36-year-old. She actually felt better when she found out I was 42.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. On my last album with Jeff, I do a joke about it, and I say, I'll never forget when my wife first told me her age, I almost choked on my pizza and dropped my game token.
Now, you currently, as you mentioned, have another special, a Netflix special with Jeff Foxworthy, and you two also have your own comedy radio network on Sirius XM called Jeff and Larry's Comedy Roundup. How long have you guys been buddies?
Man, I've known Jeff since probably 1986, 1987.
Wow.
I believe I met him first in 86, and we just hit it off. I mean, I love him so much. He's like my adopted brother, and we like the same things. We kind of grew up the same way, and we just hit it off. You know, we were both huge Atlanta Braves fans, and at the time when I was learning how to do stand-up, the Comedy Corner in West Palm Beach had opened up. He was one of the first acts to come through there. And I had season tickets for spring training for the Braves. And so, of course, he loved that. So we just kind of hooked up. And that was our big thing. You know, we'd go to spring training a couple of weeks a year. And then it was really cool to watch him get famous and popular and just explode. I mean, it was really awesome. And it was him that got me the slot on the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Oh, really?
He didn't know that I was doing a whole thing called Larry the Cable Guy. So he wanted to see it. And so I went up and did a show up in Nashville for a show called History of Country Comedy. And he just loved it. So talked it over with the other three guys and I got the slot. So it's pretty neat.
Is he a fun guy to tour with? Do you guys ever get sick of each other when you're on the road?
No, man. Jeff is just awesome. He's just a fun guy. I think Jeff is funnier. I mean, Jeff obviously is hilarious on stage, but I think off stage, he's twice as funny. Nobody makes me laugh like freaking Jeff Foxworthy when he goes into his little, he'll do his little redneck voices. Yeah. And I mean, he really makes me laugh. And the funny thing is, we both get it. We both literally grew up the same way, you know.
Really?
And so I was just in a Midwest. I was from a farm community in the Midwest. He's from a hunting community in Georgia. So it's two different, you know, it's two different kinds of redneck, but it's still the same country envelope, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the ironies about you is you play Larry the Cable Guy, who is a Southern redneck, and yet you're actually from Nebraska. In fact, you still call Nebraska home, I think.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in a town of 1,270 in a town called Pawnee City, Nebraska, in the southeast corner. I grew up next to the livestock barn. We raised pigs. We had pigs. And when I was growing up, my goal, I wanted to be a cattle auctioneer.
Really?
And that's how I grew up. And then I moved to Florida. So I moved to the South when I was 15. And then I was there for 36 years. And so I went to college at a Baptist college in Georgia. And I just, you know, I just submerged myself into the whole culture. It wasn't far from mine. You know, everywhere I went in the South was exactly like where I was in the small town of Pawnee. Except we just didn't have accents. That's about the only difference.
Is there such a thing as a Nebraska redneck, or is there a difference between a Nebraska redneck and a Southern redneck?
Just the accent, brother. That's about it. And I'll be honest, some of folks in my neck of the woods even had one of those.
Well, Larry the Cable Guy has just been wildly popular for years. He's toured to sold-out audience, had 3 gold comedy albums, and starred in 3 movies. Why do you think this lovable redneck is so popular with audiences?
Well, you know, I'm a friendly guy. I don't think I'm better than anybody else. I just want to make people laugh. I've always been friendly, outgoing. I love my fans. I think they can see that. You know, I'm kind of like everybody else. I'm just a regular guy. I really am. I have a different job. Of course, I'm a comedian, but as far as my life goes, I grew up just like any other regular Joe Blow on the street, you know? So I think that comes across. I think that came across for Jeff too, for all of us blue collar guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're just always very approachable. We're all very thankful for our success. We understand that there's people funnier than us. There's not that many people that worked harder than we did. Yeah. There's a, you know, Jeff, you know, I always learned that from Jeff. It's called show business for a reason. And if you're not good at the business part, then the show part's a lot harder to attain. But if you're good at the business part, when the show part shows up, then you're prepared for the show part. And so I think we just always worked really hard, and we didn't really chase the money. We chased the opportunities you know, we come from working class families, but I think that's the appeal. I mean, we just, you know, we are who we are. Yeah. We don't try to put on this front that, you know, we don't talk down to our crowds. We want our crowds to laugh with us. I think that's the appeal. And, you know, we would always stay, and I used to sign autographs, and lines would be out the door, and I'd finish a show at an arena, and I'd sign autographs for 3.5 hours after the show.
Wow.
And it got to the point where they said, hey, you got to knock it off, man. We're paying overtime for people to stay. And so we couldn't do that anymore. But I learned that, you know, from Jeff. You know, Jeff always stayed and talked to his fans. And that's another good thing. When you actually communicate with your fans and talk to your fans, they tell you what they liked, what they enjoyed, what they didn't like, what they didn't enjoy. And it really, you know, it helps your act out.
Yeah. Now, do you like going on tour? I know some comedians who just love to get out there and hit the road, and some of who just completely hate it. What's the deal with you?
No, you know, I like it. Especially now that I started golfing. I got into golfing 10 years ago. So now I golf when I'm on the road. I get to golf at different courses, which is nice. But no, you know, I only do about 30 a year, 25 to 30. You know, you do get sick of traveling. You miss your family. And so obviously you get sick of traveling. But the payoff is doing the show, because there's nothing funner than the show. And there's nothing funner than writing a joke. And you just can't wait to get to that part in your act so you can do that joke. And so that makes it all worth it. I think a good balance, if you can do it, then a good balance is good. And I've been blessed and fortunate enough to where I'm able to pick and choose what I want to do and go where I want to go. And look, when I was on the tour bus and we were on the road 285 days a year, I loved every minute of it. It got tedious at times. But, you know, you're out with your buddies and you take your opening act, your T-shirt guy, a video guy. I mean, it was just a great time. I don't regret any of it. I loved it. The times now of those big tours are over with. But the few times that I do go out on the road, I enjoy every second of it.
Mm-hmm. And when you're building a new special like this one, do you test out new material on the road? Do you have a comedy club that's your home base for that sort of thing? Where do you try out material?
Yeah, you know, I always go up to the Funny Bone in Omaha. It's about 45, 50 minutes north of me. And I'll go up there and I'll work out new material. But the majority of the material, though, is you just pop it in as I'm doing a show. Uh-huh. So I would put in 5 or 6 brand new jokes every night just to see if they worked. I mean, I already knew I had enough jokes that the crowd was going to enjoy it. But I would always try new stuff every night just to get ready for it. Yeah. But if I had large bunches that I wrote, I would go up to the Funny Bone in Omaha. And I do a guest set, or else I would just book a couple of nights, and then all the money would go to a charity in the Nebraska area or
something. Oh, that's great. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more when we come back in just a minute. I heard you say that sometimes you also test out jokes on Twitter and see what kind of reaction you get. Do you usually get good feedback that way?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I've been sending jokes out all week, and people will either give me the thumbs up or the thumbs down. Generally, they like them. Every now and then, there's somebody that goes, try again. That one was lame.
Whatever. That's constructive criticism. I mean, you could get a lot worse on Twitter. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But yeah, I like sending stuff out. You know, yeah. People like to read funny stuff. So if I think of something that I think will be funny, I'll send it out.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about the origins of Larry the Cable Guy. I understand that your college roommates helped inspire him. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a combination of just people that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. You know, I was doing characters on stage. I like doing characters. I love ad-libbing and stuff. And I was just looking for some characters. And I just hit on this one. It started out as a rodeo guy. I used to watch Mesquite Championship Rodeo, and I went on stage, put a cowboy hat, and said, this guy ever come over to your house? And I'd be like, hey, right, Bo, come around, give me an ivory enema, but he took me up there to pay with it. You know, now me, I thought it was funny because I'm a rodeo fan, but it got some kind of snickers there, you know. So then the next time I went up, I just did a cable installer for about 2 minutes, just this inept cable guy. And I did it in the accent, because the accent to me is hilarious. And Jeff and I, of course, we used to sit at the spring training Braves games, and that's all we did. We would make up stories and stuff. And he'd go, hey, did Gina bring that potato salad over for that deal we's having on Tuesday? And he'd look at me and he'd say that. And so I knew what he was doing. So I go, man, daggummit, Jeff, you know she went to church last week and the preacher had said something about, you know. So we would just go off on these 20-minute tangents and people around us would be laughing. That's why we did it. I just kind of added that into the thing. And I picked up the accent early on when I went to college in Georgia, because my roommate was from Dalton, Georgia. My other one was from Beaumont, Texas. And I don't know. I tell everybody, look, if you move to the South for any period of time and you're anywhere, you know, and I'm a country kid, you know, I grew up a country kid. And so I just started picking up the accent, and I could do it and I could not do it. I mean, even to this day, when my friends call me from Florida, I'm talking like they are. And my wife said the other day, my buddy Brad called. She goes, you know, you did that entire conversation with Brad in character. I said, well, I didn't mean to. It was Brad. That's how he talks. So, you know, it's just, that's how it started. And I did it on stage. And then I started calling a radio station in Tampa doing it. And it just got really popular. And one of the things that I was really encouraged by, one night at the Comedy Corner in West Palm Beach, it was a double bill. From Saturday Night Live. It was, what's his name? Making Copies.
David Spade. Or no, Rob Schneider.
It was Rob Schneider and David Spade were at our club.
Oh, both. Wow.
The co-headline thing. And I had done it. They were there the whole week. So, of course, we did the open mic night and had guest sets. And I went up and did a guest set. And they literally, as soon as I got off stage, they both came up to me. and said, man, that Cable Guy character you're doing, keep working on that. That's really funny. That's a Saturday Night Live type character. And I said, yeah, thanks. I'll keep working on it. So that's what I did. And the reason I never planned on doing it on stage at all, and then my buddy Les McCurdy at the comedy club, and at McCurdy's Comedy Club in Sarasota, was trying to sell tickets. And so he just billed me. Dan Whitney, a.k.a. Larry the Cable Guy from 95YNF. That was the station I was on.
So originally he began as a radio voice you were doing. He wasn't originally a stage act. Is that right?
No, he was he started on stage, but it was only about two minutes. And then my buddy wanted me to do it on his radio show. So it got popular on the radio.
Okay.
It was never a big part of my, it was something I did for just a laugh for 2 minutes. And so it got popular on the radio, and then he billed me one night as the character. And I was kind of upset at him. I told him, I said, Les, this is total theater of the mind. You know, right. I mean, I'm saying stuff on the radio that I would never say in real life. And so I went on stage as myself, and they were yelling my phrases, get her done. I popped into the character, and I couldn't follow the stinking character. So he told, and I had a funny act.
Yeah.
And then he told me, he said, have you ever thought about doing your whole show like that? And I said, not really. He says, can you? I said, and I remember this. He said, can you do your whole act like that? And I said, Les, I'm talking like a redneck 24 hours a day. I go, you've seen my friends. You know where we go. You see us at the country bars. So I went and changed, and I put on what I drove over in. By the way, for the people that think I'm faking being a country kid, I drove over in a 1986 Trans Am with T-tops with a big blue Firebird painted on it.
Love
and
it.
And I put on what I drove over in, a pair of lace-up Roper boots, a pair of blue jeans, a cut-off Nebraska t-shirt, and a NASCAR hat. And I went on stage. He took my real name off the board, and I went on stage for the first time as Larry the Cable.
And that look has lasted for the whole time, you know, and that's got to be risky because, of course, you know, listeners already knew Larry the Cable Guy from the radio. And, you know, with radio, you conjure up your own image of who this guy is and what he looks like. That must have been a lot of pressure to live up to those expectations.
Well, you know, the first person that ever saw me, the first appearance I ever made as Larry the Cable Guy was before I ever started doing it on stage. They had a live remote. They wanted me to show up at the remote. And I said, well, all right. So I showed up, and there was a line of cable trucks, 16 cable trucks, that came down from the Tampa Bay Cable Company to get a free T-shirt. And this one guy, I gave him a T-shirt. And he goes, hey, thanks a lot. Hey, where's Larry at? I go, I'm Larry. He goes, you're Larry? I go, yeah. He goes, no kid. I said, yeah. He goes, huh. Boy, you ain't nothing like I thought you'd look like. And then he turned around like he was all dejected and walked back to his truck. Like, well, so there you go. I guess I sounded older on the radio. But, that was my first time I ever saw me. And then after I did that thing in Sarasota, you know, he sold out two shows in like 30 minutes. So I like a light bulb went off in my head and said, man, if I can get more radio stations and get them to promote my show, I can sell out and get some good money in these comedy clubs, because that's what it's all about, making people laugh, making a good living. And so that's that, man, that is the complete start of everything.
What was your stand-up act like before Larry the Cable Guy?
It was the same thing. It was real quick, high energy, fast-paced, one-liners, just a lot of vaudeville type stick, just set up punch. That's what it was like. Quick, fast. Dom Herrera. You know Dom Herrera, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Dom Herrera was a good friend of ours that used to come to the Comedy Corner all the time. And Dom Herrera said that I had the funniest, fastest first 15 minutes of comedy in the country. Wow. And after that first 15 minutes, that's pretty much it. But he said, I could go anywhere with that 15 minutes and nobody could follow me.
Well, that's
I told Dom, I said, well, I better get another 15 minutes then.
Yeah, your act follows this classic joke format. Like you said, it's mostly one-liners. Were you a big fan of the great one-liner comics like, I don't know, Bob Hope, George Burns, of course, Henny Youngman, the king of the one-liners, those kind of guys?
Totally. You know, when I was a kid, I ate those Dean Martin roasts up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I loved them. Charlie Callis just killed me. And I also loved the more modern ones. Of course, I was a big Steve Martin fan.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was so goofy. I just love goofy and just stupid humor makes me laugh. And Howie Mandel on the early days of Make Me Laugh when he was a kid. I mean, he just did, you know, put the rubber glove over his head and blew it up with his nose. I mean, I just loved that stuff. And then as far as TV shows, I was a fan of Hee Haw, and I was a fan of Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just kind of like what molded my comedy. Anytime it was a one-liner type comic, I loved it. Jonathan Winters. I used to love the John Biner show.
Yeah. I was just going to say Jonathan Winters. I mean, I could definitely see a through line from his characters like Maude Frickert and especially Elwood P. Suggins all the way up to Larry the Cable Guy.
Oh, my gosh. I could watch Jonathan Winters all day long. I mean, so that was the kind of stuff that got me hooked. And I would try to write regular bits, and they just would never work. Everything came out just a quick, funny twist. I had a twist. Everything has a twist to it, a little one-liner to it. So I embraced it because there's not a lot of us out there. I think it's a really great art form because one-liners require – just meticulous timing, and I'm just a fan of that. I think you know, one of my best compliments I ever got, and I got to tell you, I don't even know the guy's name. There was two really cool situations that I was happy with about my stand up. You know, you like the other people, you like your peers to recognize what you do, but I think. A long time ago, and I don't even know the guy's name, but there was an interviewer that passed away in Las Vegas, and he was known. He interviewed everybody. He was like this big interviewer. Any act that came through Vegas, he interviewed him. Well, the guy passed away, and somebody sent me the article. They thought I would like it, and I'm looking at the article, and his son eulogized him. And one of the paragraphs in there, he says, but out of all the people that my dad interviewed, he used to love interviewing the old time comics. And he talked about, you know, when these old one-liner comics would come through, and he said he interviewed this and this, and he said all the way up to his new favorite one-liner comedian, Larry the Cable Guy. And I was man, that is so awesome. And then I'll tell you another really cool story. Tony Orlando is a really good buddy of mine. He was my co-host in my Christmas specials.
Oh, yeah. Tie a yellow ribbon. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, and that was a thrill for me. I don't get starstruck, you know, really, but I get starstruck for people in my childhood because they, you know, I remember from my childhood, and Tony's one of those guys. And so I met him, and my first thought was, man, I want to do a show with Tony. I mean, be my co-host because I remember Tony Orlando and Don, that show. And so he did it, but he called me up one night after one of my specials was on Comedy Central. And he called me up one night and he goes, hey, Dan, you'll never guess. I said, what? He goes, so I'm sitting here at the house. I got a phone call from Cosby. I guess him and Cosby were buddies. And he told me, he said, hey, Tony, turn the TV to Comedy Central. You're watching TV. He said, yeah. He goes, have you ever heard of this guy, Larry the Cable Guy? And Tony said, I told him, I said, oh my gosh, he's a really good friend of mine. As a matter of fact, we're going to do a Christmas special together. He asked me to be his co-host. And Bill Cosby told Tony Orlando, he said, this guy's timing is impeccable. And I was like, man, Tony, that is the coolest thing ever, you know?
Yeah. And that's hard because, I mean, you know, if you're going to be a one-liner comic, you basically have to come up with two or three times as much material as another type of comedian.
Exactly. You really do. You really do. Yeah. And there was, I think, in this last album, I think, is the same way. It's just one right after another. And I think there's a couple of times, though, I did for the first time kind of go off on a bit, like a longer bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't normally do that, but I made sure that I put some one-liners in the longer bit because I cannot, if I go more than 15 seconds on stage without a laugh, without just a silent, I can't handle it. I have to be talking or getting a laugh.
Now, we were just talking about some of your peers in the business, and it might surprise some people to know that you're actually good friends with, of all people, Lewis Black. Now, it seems to me that politically, culturally, and even comedically, you two could not be more different. What do you and Lewis talk about when you're together?
Well, you know, I haven't seen Lewis in a long time. Lewis and I, early on, when we were in the clubs and doing stuff in the clubs, we got to be really good friends every time he came through Omaha because we knew the same people. And then I would run into Lewis on the road. But, you know, that's kind of a clique that we had. It was me, Foxworthy, Kathleen Madigan, Vic Henley, who just passed away, unfortunately, Lewis Black. So we were buddies, like Kath and Ron White. Like Kathleen and Ron and Lewis are really good friends. So, you know, I knew Lewis coming through the Comedy Corner in West Palm Beach. And so we were buddies. And so I haven't seen him in a while because, you know, we do different stuff, but we were really good friends back in the day. But I asked Lewis to write that thing in my book because Lewis and I, even though we're completely polar opposites as far as politics goes, we both love comedy. We both love jokes. We both love the art of the jokes. And we both have a certain unique style, and we're both fans of each other's act. We think they're hilarious. And I just thought it'd be kind of cool to get somebody that was completely politically opposite of mine to write the thing for my book to let people know, look, you can disagree and be politically opposite. However, you can still be friends and you can still have a few things that are common that you agree on. With me and Lewis, politically, we're completely opposite. Comedy-wise, we're right down the same. We agree on everything on comedy. And so, I don't know, it was just kind of a point that I wanted to make. And I'm sure Lewis took some flack from some people for doing that, but he's my friend, and I love Lewis, and I would do anything for Lewis.
Yeah, but I mean, these days, there are a lot of friendships that are getting, and even families that are getting destroyed by politics. I think that's an important message. And, you know, the public is so quick to shut down comedians these days if they don't like their politics or a comic says something that offends them. I feel like people are just looking to get butt hurt these days, especially on social media. Do you run into much of that?
Well, they really are. And I think that the people that really, and I think comics get along way better than anybody else because comedians love jokes. And I think that, you know, I think that comedians amongst themselves, we don't really get offended at much. We know it's a joke and we can rib each other and we can make fun of each other and we can blast each other. But at the end of the day, I love him. He loves me. It was a joke. Let's move on. We got thick skin. It's not, you know, and I think there's still a lot of, I think some of the newer comics coming up. I don't know. I think the guys that I came up with, I mean, they still do comedy like they're supposed to do comedy. Mm-hmm. And how I say that is it used to be if you didn't like a comedian or you were offended by what a comedian said, you just put on your big boy pants and you didn't buy his material. You didn't go see his show and he's out of your life.
Right.
I don't get it. That's how you do it. That comedian's offensive. Well, guess what? Don't pay to go see him and you don't got to worry about it.
Right.
but nowadays it's like they can't just not go see him. They want to make sure nobody else can see him because evidently they're the arbitrator of what kind of entertainment you can like and what kind of entertainment you can't. And that's ridiculous. So there's comics that I don't like at all. I can't stand their politics. But you know what? I credit them for finding an audience. Comedy is hard. They found an audience. Will I go see them? No, I won't go see them. But so big deal. So I don't go see them. They have an audience. People like them. Good right. for them. God bless them. I will never say anything bad about them. I just, they're out of my life. So right. I don't understand why the regular people can't figure that, especially people that go to comedy clubs and get offended.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are really irritating.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what, get a sense of humor or don't ever go to a comedy club.
Well, how about from the other side? Do you ever run into trouble? Do you ever get audience members who maybe are from the rural South and feel like you're making fun of them with this kind of feckless, unsophisticated redneck character? Does that ever happen?
Not at all. Look, when I was growing up in the farm, when I was growing up in the country, I mean, people still make jokes about living on farms, and you know what? Who cares? Sure. We like to laugh. We can look. I can make fun of myself with the best of them, you know. And knowing at the end of the day, I'm not hurt. It didn't give me cancer. I'm, you know, yeah. It's like. But no, I think that's the cool thing about growing up in the South. And one of the things I learned about growing up in the South and being around all my buddies from the South, we can take a joke.
Mm-hmm.
They can take a joke. They know when you're being just funny. And I mean, there's not one person that I grew up with living in the South that doesn't make fun of people that go to Walmart, because we even have friends that go to Walmart. They're like, what are you doing? I mean, come on, you know, and it's funny. We don't, I mean, I just don't get it.
Of being in on the joke.
Yeah. I've never had a problem with that because people take it. People understand their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I'm on stage going, boy, I'll tell you what, everybody in the South is a bunch of ignorant. I don't do that at all. I know, everybody in the South knows somebody like what I do on stage.
Sure.
And it makes them laugh. It's somebody's uncle. It's somebody's brother-in-law. It's somebody's dad. And it's like, oh, man, Dad, you do that. It's so funny. And we make fun of ourselves, and we move on, and we love life, and we like to laugh.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, in all honesty, if I thought that the people I grew up with in the South thought I was making fun of them, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and I think that shows. Well, right now, here we are. America's in the middle of an unprecedented crisis with the coronavirus and most of the country on lockdown. And a lot of comedians like yourself are asking, you know, what is the role of comedy in all this? Is it okay to make jokes about what's going on? What's your opinion on that?
Well, look, if you're a comedian, you want to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you can't, it's like I did a thing. I'm doing a little series now about Star Trek. And it's Captain Kirk.
Oh, yeah.
Stargate, 17th day of captivity on the USS Enterprise. And I just tweet out a picture and what the caption says.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. I'm getting good response on it. But one person says, I don't think, you should joke about this virus. And it's like, you know what? Then we can't joke about anything. If you can't try to make a lighthearted joke about something like this, then, I mean, you know, then just don't listen.
Yeah.
Then don't follow me on the website anymore. You know, I can understand if it's a vicious, vicious joke and it's, you're making fun of dying people. But if it's just a lighthearted, corny joke about the virus, it's like, look, people are so sensitive. But our job is to make people feel better and to make people laugh. And that's what comedy has done throughout history. I mean, you mean to tell me that nobody was doing World War II jokes during World War II?
Sure, yeah.
You know, I did my movie Delta Farce.
Yeah.
And some people thought, well, you shouldn't be putting out a comedy movie while our soldiers are over there. And it's like, well, it's a tribute to them. It's something to make them laugh. It's not serious. So, you know, the first people we sent 10,000 DVDs over to the servicemen. Man, they couldn't have thanked me enough, and they loved it. They thought it was funny, and it wasn't disrespectful, and it was finally nice to get some humor about this. You know, so some people think is funny, other people don't think is funny. It just goes back to the whole thing. If you don't think it's funny, don't listen to it.
Sure, sure. And God knows you have been a good friend to our troops, and boy, you know, we need comedy more than ever right now. Before we go, can I ask you, Larry the Cable Guy, you know, how is he handling all this with the coronavirus and having to stay at home with the family, social distancing in Walmart and all that?
Oh, man, you're doing pretty good, I'll tell you that, Mike.
Hanging in there, huh, Larry?
You're hanging in there pretty good. The kids put them on eBay last Thursday, so they're out of here. You made some money on them. I'm trying to figure out this dadgum Common Core. You know, I was homeschooled when I was a kid, you know, finished second in my class. Common Core is a 12-step program to solve one math problem. And if you can get through that, you're going to start drinking. And then you're going to have to enter a 12-step program to get off the alcohol.
Well,
Jeff always said that I do jokes that no other comic can do because it's just the way you tell the joke.
That's for sure. Well, again, Larry the Cable Guy, Remain Seated, is now out through Comedy Dynamics Network. Dan, where can folks watch your special?
Well, Comedy Dynamics, man, that goes everywhere. So it's anywhere that you watch, whatever apps you have, or you watch specials or sports or any kind of pay-per-views. I mean, it's on DirecTV. It's on Dish Network. It's on YouTube. It's on Prime, Amazon Prime, Hulu. It's on all of that stuff.
Okay. Okay, terrific. So pretty much all of the only things that we can rely on for entertainment right now, you covered them all here.
Pretty much. And as a matter of fact, I'm thinking of changing my name to Larry the Social Media Guy.
And by the way, there's also an album coming out this weekend, too. And of course, folks can visit your website, LarryTheCableGuy.com, for more fun stuff. And hopefully, whenever this quarantine ends and it's safe, we'll see you hitting the road and performing live again. Dan Whitney, a.k.a. Larry the Cable Guy. Thanks so much for talking with me, man.
You got it, Ben. I appreciate you, bud. Thank you so much. Get her done.
All right. Well, thanks again to Dan Whitney and Larry the Cable Guy for coming on the show. One more time, his new comedy special, Larry the Cable Guy, Remain Seated, is now out through Comedy Dynamics Network, available on Comcast, Amazon Prime Video, Spectrum, Apple TV, Dish, Google Play, DirecTV, Vimeo, YouTube, and other streaming platforms. You can also listen to his new album on SiriusXM, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music, Pandora, SoundCloud, and more. Visit LarryTheCableGuy.com and follow him on Twitter at GetHerDoneLarry. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit KickAssNews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.